This is CliffCentral.com.
Progressive, cultured, and brave.
And now, the moment you've all been waiting for.
The Dreaded Exchange with CRB Ely. Live on Cliff Central.
Yes, the best show on Cliff Central is back. This is CIB Ely live from Johannesburg. And we're talking to the world. And of course, this is a show that is cultured, brave, and progressive. And today I've got a very interesting show. I've been seeing a lot of tweets and a lot of talks about the new Black Panther movie. And it started making me think. You know, everyone is excited. Of course, everybody's excited because, I mean, black magic, melanin magic. We're seeing all these different cultures. The soundtrack is really amazing. We have South African artists on there. We've got Babes Odumo. We've got Java on there as well. But I've been feeling a bit tense because I'm like, as much as this is a great movie about Africa and Africans, who's actually profiting from it? And on top of that, what does it say about Africa? Are we able to build our stories? Are we able to build African luxury brands? Are we able to make money from who we are as Africans? And I want to explore that idea a bit more. But before I get to that, I've got a song that I want to play, but I don't know if it's allowed on radio. But it's part of the Black Panther soundtrack, and I hope you enjoy it, featuring J-Rock, and this is Kendrick Lamar.
Bitch, I'm on the roll, and I put that on the game.
Yeah, miss me with that bullshit. You ain't really wild, you a tourist. I be blacking out with the purist.
Hey, miss me with that bullshit. I guess that's what Jacob Zuma is saying right now. But hey, ANC, you want me to leave? Miss me with that bullshit. Smartly, what up?
Hey, what are you doing to Msholozi, Papa?
Msholozi is like, you guys want me to leave? Miss
Yo,
me with that bullshit, man.
Thug life ain't going nowhere, son.
The other today, like, we just landed back from Cape Town. We almost didn't actually make the show today. But I thought, you know what? Dory's gonna kill me if I don't show up or if I tell her to play like a recording. So I had to show up. So today I was at the airport at like 4:30 in the morning. They delayed our flight, but we jumped on the flight. We drove here. Now we're here. And we arrived like 10 minutes ago, so we made the time. Sorry?
We took some beautiful pictures on the
Get way. Closer to the mic, brother. Why
I'm
are you so
we took
nervous?
Some beautiful pictures.
Yeah.
On the road. I'm sure we have a couple of tickets waiting for us.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And this past weekend, we were in Cape Town for SA Menswear Week, and there were various African designers that were showcasing. We've got Tokyo James. We had Good that showcased. We've got Tupop that showcased.
Oh, and
it was such it was such a crazy time because also around, you know, SA Fashion Week, there was also Ultra Music Fest. There was also the big excitement about Wakanda, the Black Panther movie.
That's hectic, man.
And this past weekend, I've just been thinking a lot lately about Africa. You know, this Black Panther movie is going to be huge. No one has any doubt about it. Everyone's been talking about it. Everyone's raving about it. Everyone's like, it's going to win an Oscar and whatnot. But I've been thinking, what does it mean for me as a young African? You know, with this movie, knowing that it's owned by Marvel, of course, it means that, you know, black people are going to not necessarily profit as much as the white people that own the franchise. But then what does it mean for Africa? Does it mean that once this movie comes out, there's going to be a strong focus on Africa and what we do? Does it mean that as Africans, we're going to start being proud of our cultures? And, you know, are we going to get that gateway to start selling our cultures? Are we going to be able to build African luxury brands? Does this movie define the tipping point of where African luxury and lifestyle is going? And in studio today, I've got Sibahle Nyila.
Yeah, yeah.
Most of you guys see me all the time with Sibahle. And Sibahle is actually my manager. But besides being my manager, he's actually what he calls himself. He's the builder of African cool. He's worked with brands like Legends Barber, you know, amongst other things that he's done that I can't mention on air. But he studied marketing and advertising at AAA school. So he's highly, highly qualified, worked with big Fortune 500 companies. And basically, his main thing is about how do I sell African cool. Sibahle, welcome to the show, man.
Hey, man. Thank you very much for having me here.
How do you feel? Why do you keep running away from the mic?
I'm too cool for the mic. Am I good now?
You're good.
Okay, cool, man.
How do you feel about Black Panther? Are you going to go see the movie?
Oh, I'm definitely seeing that movie. First of all, I'm going to be wearing a special. Yeah. You understand what I'm saying? So when I'm going to be... Umpato is going to be galore.
Yeah.
I'm going to make sure that I'm in front of the line singing Shosholoza, my man.
Can Pick I ask something very Panther. Interesting, actually? This is part of my research. How did you hear about the movie, or when did you first hear about Black Panther, or even see Black Panther?
Look, bro, I found out about Black Panther or Black Panther.
Panther.
Or Panther.
Oh, yeah, it's long English. Sometimes, guys.
So I found out about it on Black Twitter actually.
Yeah.
It was a few months ago.
Yeah, and I first saw Black Panther in Civil War. The Iron Man movie. No, it was Captain America.
Yeah.
That featured the
Iron Man. I thought you were talking about, when did I find out about the independent movie coming out, not as a collective of...
Of everything else.
I've seen the Black Panther.
Okay, cool. Now, let's get into the crux of this, what we're discussing today.
Yeah.
Does Africa have the ability to produce African luxury brands that Africans want to buy?
Yes and no.
Why? Elaborate.
I'll say yes because we have the source for it. We have the juice for it. We have the creative ability for it. We have the hunger for it. I get a sense that not just in South Africa, around Africa, there's this whole awakening about being proud of one's culture, whether it be in East Africa, North Africa, Southern Africa. There's a lot of people who are in the forefront of popular culture who are making sure that they live out their culture on the platforms that they're on. There's more and more people like that. You know what I mean? So that's the part of the yes. And we have people who continuously build brands, who build products, who put out art. You know what I'm saying? The no part comes in the part of we don't have the proper necessary infrastructure to sustain. For instance, when a brand starts out or a product is started out and there's a whole big buzz about it, right? That company or that product or that owner of that product, that artist is going to have to scale, right? So you can no longer produce whatever you were producing at the back of your house or a room or a small factory. Now you need a huge machine to put this thing out. This is just the product itself or the art itself or whatever it may be that you are putting out. That's besides talking marketing. That's besides talking distribution. Just producing that one garment. Let's say you were Emma Closer, for instance. Uladum. I'm sure he had nightmares about finding the right people to make sure that once he's come up with a design, show them how to produce with the sample, finding the perfect people in terms of quality, time, and location to produce that here in South Africa. He probably does now, you understand? But it probably took him a while to find it, because if you think about it, in manufacturing, where is South African manufacturing? Yeah. The Chinese are wiping us out. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
But can I ask you something? I mean, I want to take this topic beyond fashion. I mean, it also includes like things like, you know, why aren't we building our own Mercedes in Africa?
Again.
You know, why aren't we building all these other things, hotels that go across the world, you know, foods that go across the world. So I just want to get into it. Is it an infrastructure thing that's hindering us?
It's partly that. Like I said, like it's partly infrastructure. Also, when I'm talking infrastructure, it's not only infrastructure in terms of production infrastructure, like a financial infrastructure. Can you imagine for a person, let's say for a person like a black kid, who's dope at producing, let's say, whatever it may be, he's musically inclined or he's a painter. You understand what I'm saying? Where do you go as a black South African kid to say, I need funding because I have a business model here that works. People want my work. Now, how do I leverage my art into a business? You understand what I'm saying? And when you go to most of these institutions for funding, bro, sheesh, man. Like, where are you saying a kid from Soweto must get collateral, for instance? Like,
yeah.
He is the collateral, Baba.
Yeah. For me, what was interesting this past weekend, so I was talking to a friend of mine on WhatsApp. His name is Brian.
Mm.
So Brian hits me up and he's like, yo, I just came back from the Makosa store. What the fuck? So I'm like, what do you mean, what the fuck? He's like, I went to the Makosa store and they want to sell me a Makosa knit for $7,000.
Yeah.
And then he's like, I thought I would buy this brand, but I'm no longer going to buy it. So I say to him, but yo, you are the same person who will spend $30,000 in Gucci.
Yeah.
But then you don't want to spend it on my clothes, which could be the better quality.
Yes.
So where am I missing the line here? And then he's like, nah, it's too expensive.
Nah,
like,
bro. It's not a mental shift. Eh?
So why do you think that there's that sort of shift? Where do you think, why do we think that because we spend 30k on Gucci and we're able to justify spending 30k on Gucci or whatever luxury brand there is, but then at the same time, my clothes are still much cheaper, still much cheaper in terms of luxury, still much cheaper, high quality South African made knitwear,
one of our own,
but every single day we sort of drag my clothes for not, you know, dropping the prices, and it's like, but he's trying to build his own African luxury brand that he can sell to the world.
Independent.
So why is it that we're in the space where we want to spend more money on European brands and Western brands than actually our own brands?
Because we've been taught and told that they are better.
Yeah.
Simple.
So
it's
what?
It's the same. It's the same fundamental point of departure where movie producers, right? They want to tell a South African story. They want to do a movie about Nelson Mandela, about Winnie, about Brenda, whoever. Their first inclination is to get an American actor. You understand what I'm saying? Because they're going to be like, yo, we need ticket sales. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because they know the conditioning of our people. Yeah. Our mind. This thing is deep-rooted. We always think what belongs to us.
Could you also say then another, like, I mean, I hear from the consumer mindset that, I mean, a consumer is brainwashed to think European, everything is better. I mean, we open magazines. Even a proudly South African magazine.
Dude, they spend money to teach you that. What do you mean?
Yeah, you see Burberry. No, of course.
I did that. I worked for ad agencies for how long?
Yeah. No, I certainly agree. Then do you think maybe also designers are failing to communicate effectively to the consumer?
I wouldn't blame designers necessarily.
Or the creator, because it's broader than design.
Again, dude, you have to understand, you know what you know.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying? You know what you know, you don't know what you don't know. They're doing the best with the means they have at the point where they're at. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So you're not expecting somebody to fully comprehend what brand communication is. They know how to put out a great product. You understand what I'm saying? So there needs to be a system where you are doing this, you are producing this product. Once you've produced this product and you've been able to scale it from A to B, to take it to C, I need this element of communication. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
To better communicate to consumers about the product. And just the bare minimums of brand awareness. You understand what I'm saying? But now to tell that guy that, yo, look, dude, you have to go to an ad agency, or you have to go to, like, bro, to put an ad on GQ and Fun. Do you understand what that means, bro? Financially, for a guy who's working from his pocket, who does not have funding.
But don't you think we've surpassed the magazine era now, where social media, things like starting a blog for your brand, Twitter, Instagram.
But like, how much time must I spend on the blog? They're busy doing the work. You have to remember, these guys are not people who have staff of like 20 people or 25 people. You understand? So they're making sure that they run a lean team to maximize on what they get out of the product.
Yeah. But I'm saying, of course, I mean, when I started with my 3M, I was running everything alone. But everything I've built online. So what I'm saying is that...
How did that go for you mentally?
Sorry?
How did that go for you?
It was fine.
Were you not stressed out running everything?
Not necessarily, because I was still new in the industry at the time and there was no expectation. I just did whatever I felt like it. So what I'm saying is, for example...
And do you feel like you scaled it to where it should be by now?
Not necessarily, not yet.
Okay.
But I'm still working my way there. Yeah, but I'm saying is, brand-wise, the brand is built, the followership is there.
Yeah,
so I'm able
strong,
to
yeah, yeah.
transfer that into sales. But what I'm trying to say is, for example, like right now, let's say, like being Ulatuma or Maxhosa, I mean, he's the obvious example. Cause he's like,
we're really on this dude. Let's find somebody else.
No, we're not. Cause I think he's doing really great. But I'm thinking he's the only prime example we can use, because it's the only South African luxury brand that's like gone global in that scale.
Yeah, but there's another homie coming. He's got his own Glenfiddich. But I don't want to.
But so what I'm trying to say, for example, I've been on the Macosta website and I've seen it. I think it's dope.
It's beautiful.
But then I'm like, okay, cool. Where's the content?
Mm.
So to showcase that journey of design, to showcase that journey of artistry. I mean, if you go on the Gucci website, there's the Gucci Atelier. We can actually see how the clothing is made and the quality and whatnot. So do you think when it comes to our brands, we're failing to communicate that? Let's take out the money. Let's take out the resource. Now I'm talking just creating content. I mean, taking your phone just to create content. Because like, that's why there's all these kids in America that are starting their own brands. Look at Ian Connor. He has his own shoe brand.
Yeah.
And literally, dude, like he shoots everything on his phone, but he trends on social media all the time. So for me, it's like, is there a sense of we're not trying to push it to that level, or are we not using social media enough? What do you think it is? Because I still think there's a space.
I don't think it's
for us
or.
To be.
I think it's a combination of a couple of things. It could be that too. But also, you have to think, like, in the geographical area that you're in, the knowledge base of how I can scale a brand like that. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, for instance, you're a specialist at that, at social media. Other people are not, so they want to trade safely.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying? So there's risk factor too. Because once you do something right on social media, we all love you. Once you do something wrong on social media, we all hate you immediately.
Yeah.
Especially with Black Twitter, we judge much harsher if you're a black kid trying to do something right. So I think sometimes it may also come from the fact that, you know what, I'm trying to trade safely here.
Yeah.
You know, because at any given moment it could be the silliest of things. I know I sound like I'm defending a lot of these guys, but I don't want to blame them necessarily. I just want to say that we could be better. Also, the being better probably would come from collaborating. If you know somebody who's a specialist in that, how can they get involved in what I'm doing where there's a cross-pollination of our speciality?
Yeah.
How do I come together with a Siyabeyile? How do I come together with a Maxhosa? How do I come together with a Sash? You understand? And cross-pollinate and say, look, this is what you need to do with this. I specialize in this because I'm able to grow this to this. And we sit on the table. Understand? And we build each other together. But then again, that would require us to be in a space where we are united.
Yeah. And then let's talk another thing. I mean, one of the biggest influences overseas that makes brands like Off-White pop you know, these young up-and-coming brands become big is the celebrity culture that supports young African designers.
Yeah, yeah.
In South Africa, I feel, though, as celebrities, we abuse our designers. We abuse our own brands. We never say, it's very seldom to find a celebrity that says, okay, cool, I'm actually going to spend 10K on my clothes because I believe it's the best. Designers approach, like our approach to celebrities, it's always to say, yo, how about you lend me this clothing? I'll wear it. I'll shoot it. Give it to me for free. Why do you think that is as well? I mean, if you look at all our celebrity spectrum, there's a few celebrities that actually wear local designers or support local designers. So why do you think that still is there? Or why do you think there isn't a synergy? Because consistently, I'm always surrounded by designers who are complaining about celebrities wanting to use them and even stylists using their stuff. But it never transfers into sales. It never transfers into the brand blowing up.
And have you seen how when they wear these Gucci's or Louis Vuitton's, how they punt those brands?
Exactly.
Do they do that with our people, with our local design? They don't, bro. And sometimes I wonder why do these designers still care?
Is it maybe because they try? Is it maybe because if Bonang posts, oh, I'm wearing YSL, is she hoping that, like,
bro,
YSL will see the post and miraculously somehow they'll be like, oh, be our brand ambassador?
But
maybe it's a money making thing for
also,
them.
But also, to be honest, sometimes these brands do pay. I know that for sure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sometimes they do pay for posts and stuff like that. So, but a celebrity is not going to say, yo, they pay me to do X, Y, and Z. You understand? They're not going to detail those type of things. They may detail to the local designer, say, dude, I can't afford that.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying? Then he'll be like, yo, okay, I'll rock it. But don't expect more from me than that. Which I think is messed up, which I think is bullshit. Because if you're building entertainment and luxury and style and fashion, they go together.
They're the same.
You understand what I'm saying? Yeah. So you can't want to leverage this person's product and designs and not want them to benefit
shine
from your platform to shine. Yeah. And then the next thing is somebody pops and then you want to be the guy, oh, I gave him an opportunity.
Yeah.
Which is a mess. You know, so I really think sometimes designers, especially if you're on social media platforms, bro, forget these people. You understand?
Yeah.
Forget them. Go directly to your consumer.
Do you think things will change now? I mean, looking at like the whole thing about Black Panther and being proud of African, do you think now South African celebrities or even African celebrities will start being more proud of showcasing the culture and then also collaborating with local designers?
I think so, man. I think there's a greater awakening of Africanism, of being proud, bro. There is that. We have challenges, of course. We have, but I really believe it's going to come from the youngins. You know what
the
I mean?
The youngins.
Yeah, man, youngins. We're fresh. We're in Joburg now, not in Cape Town.
Okay.
So, yeah, I think it's going to come from there. But to defend, not to brush every celebrity with the same brush, there are people who are pushing that culture, who are pushing our products. I love what Black Coffee does whenever he has a big-time American or European guest in South Africa. The first thing he does, he takes them to the people whose art he loves.
Yeah, like Casper, like he did with Swizz Beatz.
You understand what I'm saying?
Casper, yeah.
He makes sure they see where the fresh art is at, where the fresh garments are at. You understand what I'm saying? And from the outside looking in, it seems as if it's coming from a good place. He's trying to say, I have this platform, let me open it. While I have this platform, let me bust it wide open.
Yeah.
You understand? It's almost like we sent him into the promised land. He's the spy, and he's like, yo, come through, Bafito. Let's must get in.
Yeah.
And that's what we need. You understand? Because the more people you put on, right, the more chances, if there's a time where you may fall off, more people can pick you up and hold you up.
Wow.
Because if you're alone, bro.
Yeah.
Every lone ranger dies in the woods, bro.
Damn. I completely agree with what you're saying. I think, guys, please join in on the discussion. I know you're watching the ANC-NEC press conference to see whether Zuma stays. I'll tell you now, Zuma's leaving. So tune in.
Don't
with
tell
us.
People how you know too.
Tune in with us.
Problems.
Are you exposing that I know that Zuma's leaving now?
Let's just leave that. Just
so guys, please tune in, engage with us. Our WhatsApp number is 0797482090. We're also on Twitter at Threaded Exchange. We're also on cliffcentral.com on Twitter as well. We're going to come back and debate some more on the other side of this. This is Cliff Central, the Threaded Exchange, live from Johannesburg at the Cliff Central Studios. Yes, I'm back from Cape Town. If you saw my Instagram that I was in Cape Town, I jetted here. Not in my own private jet, in a commercial aeroplane. But I'll be getting to the jet life pretty soon. But today we're talking about, can Africa build luxury brands? Can we make money from luxury brands? And most importantly, can Africans actually support our own luxury brands? Are we able as Africa to get to a point where we have African brands that are as big as Dolce & Gabbana, big as BMW, big as Nike? Are we able to build that kind of future? And I'm joined today by Usbahle Nyila, who is here just giving me some of his own insights, because he's like a brand marketing genius and he specializes in selling African cool. Usbahle?
Yeah. We're still here, man.
Now let's talk about, we can all sit here and discuss, yes, as Africa, we have all this value. We're starting to wake up to selling our own, you know, talents and packaging our own stories and selling it to the world. But how do we protect that? Mm. So, for example, I look at the Black Panther scenario, for example. I mean, guys, I'm just sharing my thoughts. Don't attack me. But I look at the Black Panther scenario. I see black actors, black directors. You know, the soundtrack is black people. But at the end of the day, Marvel is white owned.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, the people that are going to make the billions are going to be the white people.
Of course.
So what would have we as black people have gained from that?
We moved the needle. You don't have total change over a night, over a year, over a decade. But you need to keep consistently moving the needle. With this movie, we're going to prove that we are commercially viable. We're going to prove that a blockbuster movie that's led by a black actor and black supporting actors, black directors, can actually sell in the billions. You understand? That in itself is a paradigm shift,
but
not
just
in Hollywood.
Don't you think?
So that moves the needle forward for us.
So don't you think now that it's going to showcase that black people can actually sell blockbuster movies, then won't it make it more, or won't it become more of an appropriation thing where white directors are now going to sit and say, you know what, we can actually make money with
black
people.
Of course it's going to do that.
So where then is that, where then does the truth from black people who own the work come from? Because as we know, all these studios are white owned.
Yeah.
Right?
You don't grow the roses without the weeds. You understand?
Yeah.
But as they grow together and you have to weed it out.
You understand?
So wherever there is a winning formula, you will have people who want to tap into that winning formula. You understand? So it's going to be our responsibility as consumers, as creators, as actors, as directors, and all of that to be to make sure that we stay true.
Yeah.
And we don't allow ourselves to move into a position where we are swayed by what we think is just beneficial for us, what is beneficial for our people, to move our culture forward, to move the black story forward. Black or Africanism in the African diaspora has been on a march for centuries, bro.
Yeah. You
understand what I'm saying? So there was never going to be a situation where the powers that be, happen to be white, they just give over the keys to the kingdom.
Yeah.
You understand? We have to incrementally take our share. You understand?
Yeah. But then, so let's talk about like as different types of creatives. Now,
yeah.
You know, we want to all represent Africa, tell our stories, right? So yeah. If I'm a blogger, sorry, that's always the reference I use because it's close to home. But I mean, if I'm a blogger and I've got a brand like a shoe brand, you know, mm-hmm. that can see my story and approaches me and says, yo, man, we love your style. We want to give you a free pair of shoes and you must mold them on your Instagram page. You know, what do I do? Do I say yes to the shoes? Do I say no?
You say yes, here's my fee.
But then now that, because this is what creators are facing on a daily, then they'll be like, no, listen, we want to build a long-term relationship.
No, I stopped my clients right
there. We don't have the budget.
They have. I know they have the budget. What are they yeah. talking about?
No, but I mean,
Galoko, I'll be on the other side of the
I
table.
I know, but what I'm trying to, I'm speaking from, no, I'm speaking from the perspective of those who are listening at home.
That's what
know?
I'm telling them now. They you have know? The budget.
But then if now.
But so, be realistic, obviously. Yeah.
So how, but that's what I'm saying. So how do you find that balance of, because that's how most brands approach these talents.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the biggest fear about, you know, representing what you're representing and not want to give away its values, that sometimes you like, you can sit there in 6 months and say every single brand that has approached me to build a relationship, whether it be Nike, whether it be so and so, you know, they've offered to give me, you know, to build that relation, that bridge to, or that opportunity to move the needle, and I've sort of just turned it down because, you know, they need to pay me.
Mm.
How do you balance it out? How do you know building a relationship here is worth it? How do you just give me a realistic
okay,
idea
cool.
of how so, these guys can gauge those waters?
So the first thing I start with money, bro.
Yeah.
Like, I don't leave it till the conversation's down the line because now we've wasted our time. I need to find out, do you have a budget for this? This is what my fee is for X work coming out of me or for a collaboration. Beyond that, when there's that pushback from the brand, you have to sit there and really think about it. Think about, so these people, the reason that they came to you, there's something of value. There's something that you have they don't have that they need for their brand. Besides money, what do they have that you don't have that you need for your brand? You understand what I'm saying? So it can't be that thing of I'm giving you exposure only okay. because you're with my brand. No. You understand what I'm saying?
But I mean, some guys do need exposure because I could be sitting there with 1,000 followers and I'm like, okay, it's Adidas. They're offering to put me on their Instagram page. It's going to grow my following to at least 10K.
Then, bro, then for you at 1,000.
No, I'm just asking. I'm paying David.
That's fine. But I'm saying then for you at 1,000K
yeah.
to grow to 10,000 from an Adidas collaboration on Instagram. If that's where at the point you are at, the crux of the value that you're looking for, then you must be able to live without, with the fact that they're not going to pay you money. Plus, they're not going to pay somebody with a 1,000 followers money anyway. That's what I think you do know.
So, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, but what I'm saying is always start by be comfortable around talking money.
Yeah.
Be at home talking money. A lot of people get so uncomfortable around money. That's why they get rolled over and messed over. I almost cursed you.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's because they're uncomfortable talking money. They're uncomfortable calling out what their value is. So get comfortable around that. And it doesn't mean immediately all these brands will pay you out like it's nothing. But you'll start being in conversations. And once you are in these conversations, you'll start knowing how to control those conversations. Once you've had one conversation, two conversations, three conversations with brands, you already know where they're leaning towards. You know how to posture your conversations. You know what I'm saying? But beyond the money, you have to look at what is the most urgent need for your brand in terms of branding, awareness, and sales. And what can they provide to your brand besides just Instagram?
Yeah.
Is there an opportunity to work together beyond just a campaign?
Where is that boundary then? I mean, I hear you saying that you made a comment. You said that anyways, Adidas wouldn't pay anybody that's that has 1,000 followers.
Yeah, because it doesn't give them enough penetration.
So can I ask, can I ask where is that balance? Because I mean, there's people who have 200,000 followers, but they brand value, or when I look at them, I'm like, this person's not doing anything new or anything exciting. Then there'll be someone who has 5,000 followers who I'm like, yo, this person's actually doing some real shit and I want to pay them to something for money. So don't you think that brands focusing so much on followership sometimes can lose value? Even if it's getting penetration, but it's not the kind of penetration that will
penetrate.
Will penetrate. Because think about it, like, if Wang Man has 200,000 followers is posting, we can see that, oh, this person's being paid, cool, we like the picture, she looks great, or he looks great, but it's not going to transfer sales. But if, for example, there's a Trevor Stearman who has less followers, but, oh, I can see there's a story, there's art direction, there's a, you know what I'm saying, there's more of a package deal.
How you show that's going to translate into sales? There's nothing definite.
Yeah.
But it's a better bet when somebody.
But my thing is though, do you think followers always trump quality of content?
No, and that was not what I was saying.
That's what I'm asking. So what I'm trying to say is where is that balance?
It's a gamble either way, bro. Advertising is a gamble either way. You understand? But I need to take that. I need to take my highest chances ratio. You understand what I'm saying? So when I'm looking at someone who's at 1,000 and I'm looking at someone who's 200,000, right? And I do work with them.
Yeah.
The chances of more people being aware of the work that we're doing together, and the chances of translating that into sales, and the chances of follower loyalty to that person and the work that they do are much higher than the person with 5,000.
Okay.
You understand what I'm saying?
So there's a balance. So then as a marketer, if I'm listening to this show right now as a marketer and I'm doing a campaign, I'm looking at, okay, these
people. And that's
people,
not the only thing. It's just the aspect that we're talking about now. There's so many other things that you judge by.
So what are those other things?
Another thing that you're talking about, is there brand synergy with the work that this person is doing? Is it going to be believable? Understand what I'm saying? It's like, for instance, let me give you an example using you. How many campaigns in the short space of time that I've been around that I've turned away? And you're like, bro, do you understand where I'm at right now?
40,000 worth and higher. Numbers are counting.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But, and then I've detailed to you why, where will it hinder us in the long term and in the short term? Because is you doing a campaign, for instance, for, let's say, I'm a keep chips.
Yeah.
Does that make sense for your brand positioning? It doesn't.
No, not at all.
And then all the other brands that are looking to do work with you because they can see how they can leverage a relationship with you, because the synergy between you being an exclusive brand, you being a quality producer of content, then they were like, yo, we're going to be standing next to Amakip Chips. What's going on? I'm just using that as an example. You understand?
Yeah.
So there's so many other factors when it comes to, yes, a followership. How many numbers does he have? The quality of work, the brand synergy. And then beyond that, the interaction of his followers with him. When you post something, how many people like, how many people comment, how many people converse with you on that platform? You understand? So it's deeper than just the number of people who follow you.
Yeah. But then, so the one end, we're looking at the talent.
Yes.
But then on the other hand, I want to look at the marketing guys. So if there's someone in marketing who's listening to us right now, and they want to choose the best people to work for their brands, what is the criteria for them?
First of all, the departure point is always about the brand. This thing of artists thinking, yo, when a brand is out there working with people, like, why do you work with those people? They don't do great creative work, or look, bro, listen, the brand is looking out for themselves, you looking out for yourself. You find great BMs and MMs, like a brand, oh, sorry, brand managers and marketing managers who go beyond the just, okay, what's our campaign? What's our target market? What's our strategy? But at the end of the day, this is a business for a brand. They have set targets. They have a campaign that they're putting out. You know, they have a particular target market. They have a goal that they're shooting for. So when an artist comes through, they have to meet the brand halfway. You can't expect just to put up creative work because it's creative work. What is the goal at the end of the day?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Okay, cool. Okay, but what I want to pick your brain on, I want to play another track But what I want to pick your brain on is, I want to know, can you actually give us a guide on how does someone build a brand? There's designers at home right now, there's personalities, there's radio jockeys, there's even people in the industry who have a lot of followers and have all these things, but they're not getting endorsements. You know, they're not being invited to events. No one cares about who they are. We're like, oh, we've seen you on Generations, but that's great. So people, a lot of the time, people always ask me about how to build a brand, and I'm always feeling like, as much as I've built my brand, I'm still underqualified. And you, having built so many brands, I think you can give us a nice guideline on how guys can do that. Guys, please join in on our debate. It's 0797482090. I'm Sia Biyula, and this is The Thread Exchange.
I never claimed to be a saint at all. Or Russian tripping with hollow tips in a collision of cars. Ain't that y'all? No, solo ho. Kept it clean, riding dirty, jury would've gave me dirty. Herbie love bugging out, hit the target blindfolded. Electoral college devoted to hit the score, to write the score. That's not a metaphor, raging against the machinery. Taping up the scenery, you gotta keep the peace to keep the peace. Got done, squad up and mop the block up for a cleaning fee.
I don't need you to change, I don't need you to change yourself. But I've got to get away.
Yo, Kanyiwa Baba. Kuta, only the fit will survive. Kuta Uzuma is not fit. Can you imagine? Jacob Zuma is the first president in the history of Democratic South Africa to actually be recalled by the ANC.
Nope.
Sorry?
No. Thabo.
Thabo wasn't recalled. Thabo was resigned. He was offered.
Thabo he was recalled by the party and he resigned.
No, he was never recalled.
Wasn't he? No, it was
there's recalled. There's three steps. There's three steps. You get, the ANC tells you, listen, we don't want you as our leader anymore. You have three options. It's either you resign, it's either we recall you, you face impeachment. Thabo Mbeki chose to resign. He resigned. He handed in a letter of resignation.
Yes.
Thabo Mbeki, Jacob Zuma is being recalled because he's refusing to resign.
No, bro, listen. So you're slightly wrong here. So when you get recalled by the party, right, it is the ANC. It's basically the Thuli House telling you, yo, bro, you need to step down. Right. So once what you're talking about, once you refuse to resign, so it's the same. They follow the same principle with Thabo. Well, just quicker because Thabo was a gentleman.
But he also resigned. Thabo was like, yeah, want me to step down?
But what you're talking about now, you're talking about there's two things you're talking about here. There's Parliament, there's the ANC. So now that he's refused to resign, what the ANC could do is either a no confidence vote or impeachment. Right, so it
impeachment is as a result of no vote of confidence. The same thing. So what happened is, let's open the step. So what happened is that the ANC can't have two centers of power, right? So the centers of power.
Yeah,
right,
and
now,
it's not about that really, but continue.
But yeah, there's two centers of wait. But wait, let me finish. There's two centers of power at the moment. There's Cyril Ramaphosa. There's Jacob Zuma. Now, one
Zuma
of
has no power now.
Yes, but he still is the president, whether they like it or not. But now what the problem the ANC has, what Luthuli House has, that the Luthuli House has a new leader, meaning that according to ANC, they don't want Jacob Zuma as a leader. But also the other problem is that Jacob Zuma is going rogue, meaning that as he's deployed by the ANC to be the president, meaning that he has to also serve the interests of the ANC.
And the policies.
And the policies, which Jacob Zuma hasn't done. Like we heard in a meeting that we had this past weekend, that one of the biggest things that he would arrive and be like, yo, this is my new ministers, without even consulting the ANC. So now what
has been doing that for a while.
So though, what happened now is before Sona, the faux Sona, all the other parties were like, yo, we want this guy to leave. We want to him to face impeachment.
Yeah.
Which ANC can't have that. So ANC then, the NEC was like, listen, you need to step down.
And he said no.
It's either you step down by resigning.
And
also, resigning means you resign as a president. It means you get to keep your benefits. You get to
Zuma has taken his benefits. He ain't resigning.
Yeah, you get to have you get to say your farewell speech, and everyone looks at you like you're a hero. But when you get recalled, it means you didn't want to leave Smiley. It means they had to pull you from the walls out. But I'm happy the ANC is, guys, it's actually official. So the ANC is now, Esma Gashule there is speaking right now, and he's saying they're recalling Jacob Zuma. He has until tomorrow to respond.
No, he's saying they're still interacting with him.
No, I checked now on Twitter. They're recalling him.
Oh.
Yeah, they still really? Are intact. It's still a transition period, yes, but they've recalled
oh
him.
My goodness.
And that period has to take that. When you recall a prison, it takes time because he has to respond and all those things. But anyways, let's get back to what we're talking about.
Yeah.
How does one build a brand? So let me paint a scenario that I see almost every single day or I encounter. Mm. I'm a radio presenter. People follow me because they listen to me every morning. I've got 200,000 followers. But I'm not getting endorsements. I'm not being invited to events.
Talk about a personal brand now.
Talk about a personal brand now. I'm not being invited to events. I see Abo Siyabeyile on social media have less followers than I do, but they're popping. They're going to European fashion weeks. They're doing all these things that are nice out in the world. But I'm mm-hmm. here having more followers.
Getting invited by Balmain.
Yeah. So how does mm-hmm. one actually
Tom Ford.
How does one begin to build what is called a brand? And what is a brand? Can a person be a brand?
Yeah, a person can be a brand. It's much more challenging using the analogy of a person, but it's a good analogy anyway. Even if you're building a product, a service, or it's just your personal brand. The number one thing I think is be consistent, right? You may not appeal to the fashion market, but there's somewhere where you appeal. If you have 200 followers, trust me, you are getting invited to some event. Maybe not the ones you want. You understand what I'm saying? But you, number one thing that you need to build a brand is consistency.
Okay. So number one. So let's do it. How many points? How many points are we doing? We're doing 5, 10 points? 5 points?
Let's just do five. Or
five.
Three.
So point number one, consistency.
But this consistency covers a lot of things. It's a
okay,
multiple
points. Okay. So break it down first. What does consistency look like?
You need to have a consistent voice, right?
Okay.
So you need to think of a brand, whether it's a product or service, as a person. That person must have a consistent tone of speech. You have to have consistency of messaging to your consumer, to your target market, right? You need to have a consistency of positioning, how we view you.
Yeah.
You understand? If you're a person, who do you hang out with? Who do you sit next to? If you're a cognac, do you sit next to... I don't want to name
other luxury brands that are on the same level.
Level, or do you sit next to a...
Nicknames.
A 9 rand 50 can of beer.
Yeah.
Understand? Is that where we would catch
could
me?
Could I then further say that point number one, being consistent, a big part of consistency is being yourself and being
yes.
honest to your voice.
Honest to yourself, honest to consumers, honest to your environment.
So, because most of the time people think once they become brands, they need to then change and be fake.
No, what made
you,
bro?
Let
stick
me
to
grow
what made
into
you.
A brand instead of stick let me grow what, more into myself.
Have you seen, let me give you an example. Have you seen Black Coffee playing internationally? Yeah, but
yes.
That man is consistent. He will still play that. He's got that African sauce no matter where. He was at Ultra in Cape Town. Do you know the sound of Ultra? And then you listen to the sound of Black Coffee.
Yeah.
Yeah, you were on stage with him, actually. So when you listen to Black Coffee, bro, and he's at Ultra, his sound is so consistent, but they eat it up.
Mm.
If you didn't know Black Coffee, you'd be like, yo, but this is like a... It's a juxtaposition of sound. It's so different.
So number one, consistency.
Yeah.
Perfect example, Black Coffee, consistent in his sound wherever he is in
yes.
the world.
Consistency in his tone and how he communicates. No, even when Black Coffee is going, bah! He's consistent with the humility. You understand what I'm saying?
Number two. The point number two, because now that was point number one, be consistent. So
look,
point number two.
The overarching thing here, you're missing my point. The overarching thing with all of this is... It is the consistency of brand positioning, consistency of quality, consistency of tone, consistency of who you communicate to.
Yeah.
Make sure you stay true to that story.
Yeah. Can I propose the other points?
Propose, go.
Don't sell yourself short.
Consistency. Yeah.
Yeah, but we need to break it down for people listening at home.
Okay.
We can't keep saying consistency. We need to actually make it literal so they understand.
Cool.
So the second part is don't sell yourself short. So when you get those 1,000 rand gigs or 2,000, you're being sold or you're being given merchandise, turn that down.
And
that
live through
builds,
the pain.
That builds a brand.
Yeah,
people
live through the pain, bro.
Yeah.
It's going to be painful turning away money, but if it's money that's going to hinder your brand going forward,
yes.
You understand? The consistency of the quality of work, the messaging, the positioning, then rather don't do that. Don't sacrifice making 100,000 to take 8,000.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. But then how do you get to the point where you are getting those 800,000 rand gigs?
You, again, don't want me to use that word, but you consistently put out quality work. You consistently find avenues of leveraging brand partnerships. For instance, it's not going to be immediate that you get 100,000 rand gig. You understand what I'm saying? But the more you're in front of these brands and you're in these spaces and in these conversations, don't only look at this as a money situation.
Yeah.
You understand? Yes, I'm not saying always we're like, yo, you know what, exposure. No. When they talk to you, you don't have to say yes on the table. Get away from that and say, okay, clearly they already, before they came to me, they see how it works for them. How can I use this for myself?
Yeah.
What other doors can they open for me? You understand? Yeah. So that I can grow my platform, I can grow my followership, and I can grow the quality of work that I put out.
Okay. Point number three that I will say, because I'm also a stylist, I will say that people don't know how to package themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus. People can't package themselves. Like, who is this? Is it Gigi? No, it's not Gigi LeMain. Is it Gigi LeMain? The one who left Ambitious Records?
Yeah.
No, it's not. Is it Gigi?
It's Gigi. She just
Gigi LeMain. I think she's so stunning. I think she's so beautiful. I think her music rocks. But when I meet her, I'm like, no. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't see the brand. But, like, you see Nadia Nakai, for example,
mm-hmm.
who I don't think is lyrically as strong as Gigi LeMain.
No, Gigi will body her.
But she's a better brand. So Nadia ends up making more money because she's a better brand.
But again, it's about the team that's around you. It's about also the label that you're at. Because it actually came out, she was on one of these radio stations, and in the interview, she actually did reveal that, look, the image that I was putting out, the brand position that I was putting out, I didn't go with that. I didn't decide that. The label made me that. They were trying to turn me into a bad, and that's not consistent with her bars. So there wasn't consistency there between what we're hearing and what we're seeing.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm
saying? So I think number three, if you want to be a brand, watch hype. We have to wrap this up very quickly. The point that I have, number four, I think you touched on it, make sure you have the right team that you work with.
Yeah.
I've seen so many stars fade over a team. I look at Babes Odumo, not to say her team is not great, but she gets nominated, gets all these beautiful opportunities to do all these great things, but then her team lets her down and
says, please leave her president alone.
They'll be like, ish, we couldn't book your flights. I mean, come on. Like, I feel like Babes Odumo literally was our Beyonce. And now we're seeing, but I'm seeing
cracks.
I'm seeing the cracks in her brand now, because I feel like she's not surrounded by a really great team. That
and hopefully they can, man, I was so hopeful when African Star came on board, bro. I was like, yes. Because Farrah doesn't play games, boy.
But yeah.
But then it didn't, ish.
So watch who you work with. Number five. What is
Farrah, I love you.
What is number five? I don't know one of five. What is number five? Just keep working, man. Like, try. Also, I think
basics.
Never allow people to box you. I think that's another thing. If you look at people that have lost it in the industry for a long time, there are people that have progressed through different mediums. I look at, for example, Slicker was on Squatter Cam. Now, Slicker is Slicker Online. I look at people like, you know, Terry Petto, been an actress, but now she runs her own production company that she pushes behind the scenes. She also does and endorsements and all those type of things. So always look at other different opportunities.
Yeah.
You know, so that's it for today's show, guys. That's our one-on-one on branding and owning your Africanism and owning your story. I am Sia Bile. This is The Thread Exchange. And Usbahle Nyila, who was with me today, joining me and telling me about, he calls his stuff stacks. Do punch yourself. Yeah.
What do you mean, bro?
You're saying, yeah, quickly, we have to go.
Yeah, man, you can find me on Twitter, I_AM Stacks. I am Stacks. I_AM Stacks. Same thing on Instagram. I_AM Stacks. I am Stacks.
Thank you guys for joining us. We'll see you next week.
This is CliffCentral.com.